It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, Sound Mind broadcast, as always, with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. This week, Daniel wants to address a real common thing that you see in your sessions, marital counseling. Should I stay or should I go? The importance of to separate or not separate, and is that helpful or not?
And even divorce, because the situations we're talking about in this show are the more serious ones. I do a lot of marriage counseling, and this is usually not the case. A lot of people just want help with communication, help with growing intimacy or learning intimacy, different things like that. But sometimes I get people who they've just been so beat up in the marriage that it really becomes a question of, is this marriage worth hanging on to? Mm. And so I thought I would try to give some insight here. You know, these are not easy questions to answer because there are so many variables. Mm. You're just dealing with so many different things. So the marriage is in trouble, people are disenchanted, and sometimes it's taken many years, and over these years, as I say, the people have just been so beat up, and if there is hope in the marriage, and if they're coming for counseling, there's at least somebody has hope, but just hanging on by a tiny thread. Sometimes infidelity has been a part of it.
That'll affect any marriage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. certainly. Mm-hmm. But often it's a lack of communication, lack of meaning in the relationship or for the relationship, a lack of direction. And we're talking about direction, the couple together or individuals just, in their individual personal lives and lack of direction. You know, people get married because they're in love, and then they fall out of love, and the whole meaning of their marriage kind of, disappears. And, I heard on, I think it was like Ann Landers, but one of those shows where they're asking advice of a kind of a celebrity psychologist or something. If God created marriage for us to be happy and I'm not happy, would he want me to stay in? So she's got it all wrong, or he's got it all wrong. You know, marriage is not to make us happy, and being unhappy is not a reason to get out of marriage. Marriage has a function, and the function is to make us one and more like Christ. It's the marriage keeps the husband and wife, the man and the woman, vulnerable, ideally. Vulnerable. God created Adam and Eve naked, not just without clothes, but vulnerable to one another. And the first thing they did when they sinned was cover one another, and they're no longer vulnerable each to the other. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to get back to the place where the man and the woman are vulnerable together. And what's so important about that? Because if we're vulnerable horizontally, we're vulnerable vertically. Mm-hmm. And so this was something that God, an institution that God gave us to open us to himself too. So lack of direction, lack of real intimacy. Sometimes it's lack of purpose. Sometimes it's, lack of love. Use that term. So can the marriage be saved? Can any marriage be saved? And I say, and how? And at what cost should Christians hold on to failing marriage? Because, as Christians, we see marriage as kind of like this commitment that's not supposed to be broken. Although,
there's just as many divorces the church as there
it
is
looks
out
good
of the
on,
church.
Yeah, so it looks good on paper, but when it comes right down to me personally, a lot of people know that I actually have been divorced. I was at 19 years old, got married, and was married for 19 months, and she was unfaithful and sued for divorce, and so I know what it's like.
She was unfaithful and sued you?
And sued for divorce, I wasn't completely innocent. I mean, if I had had my eye on the ball, maybe she wouldn't have been. There's always, those things don't
pretty
happen
young.
in a vacuum.
Yeah, pretty young.
Pretty young, pretty immature. I know what it means to kind of have that fall apart. And, how much should we pursue that and try to hang on? Well, sometimes, too much damage has been done, I find, in some of these situations. And although you'd like to say that Christians you know, that with God it's possible. But as human beings, we're not able to walk in that kind of victory. And so I'd like to say that every marriage is salvageable, but I've seen situations where, humanly speaking, without just a miraculous turnaround, and sometimes we don't experience those for maybe because that's all our fault, but a lot of damage has been done and the wounds have been too deep. There's not enough time left, it seems, to heal. So sometimes too much damage has been done. Sometimes not enough damage has been done. That what I mean by that is it's uncomfortable in the marriage, but not enough to change. And I've seen situations where the wife would come and she's in tears and marriage falling apart, and then the husband would come in and he would sort of have a smirk on his face and kind of slouching in the chair, and you know good and well that he's, you know, the marriage is uncomfortable, but he's not about to change.
Would you say that's the normal scenario? Usually it's the woman who's more...
I've seen it going both ways, and I've seen it going both ways. I was about to say that one is better than the other, but I'm not sure that's true. I think that you know, my feeling, I don't know that I could support it, but my feeling is that women are on a level playing field. Women are more committed and wanting to stick around in marriage and make it work. And men
expect more from marriage.
And I think so. And I think, well, they go into it more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so, men...
Men, it's kind of like an accomplishment. And yeah. Next, you know, yeah. What's next?
Yeah. You know? And I think I just to mention in passing here, I think I've mentioned before on shows that I've more than once heard the man, when we're rebuilding the marriage, of the man saying, "I feel like I'm the only one that's having to change." And a lot of times the onus is on the man to be the leader in change. And I remind them that your wife started changing at age 12, so you have a lot of catch up to do. courage and humility. It takes courage to rebuild a marriage, and it takes humility.
Some of these variables, too, that contribute.
Yeah, there were
to
variables.
This.
You know, seldom are both parties equally vested, and that's probably one of the number one things that barriers to it. As I said before, you know, someone will come in and that person's in tears, or usually see if the husband comes in and the husband really, you know, we got to do something. It's usually that it's almost too late.
The husband finally wakes up and realizes,
yeah,
because she just served him divorce papers.
Yeah, yeah, or his suitcases were on the porch when he drove by, right. So he came straight to counseling.
Whoa, what's wrong? Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. Where did this come from? So a lot of times, seldom are both parties equally vested. Lack of agreement, lack of an agreed purpose. They're working at cross purposes. One person might have a biblical view of a marriage, and the other person might have a very materialistic, or they both have their eye on the dollar signs, and so their process in life, their journeys in life, begin to diverge instead of converge, because they're not headed toward the same purpose.
Well, unfortunately, too, in sickness and health, that seems to be a big one too, particularly as people go along in marriage,
and things come up that we didn't count on.
Yeah,
sure.
I didn't sign up for this.
Yeah.
This,
and that's
this
a
sickness or whatever.
That's a redefining of love, and and that just gets back to what we've been taught in our society. I'm entitled to in order to be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, we think that verse in Scripture that love or what is it? Happiness and the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where's that verse? Oh no, that's not a verse. That's right. Okay. Another one is family of origin things that we carry on. Variables we're talking about here. Everybody has a different familial past. There are some patterns and things.
Both people come from divorced homes.
Yeah.
That's very common. And that's why a lot of people don't get married anymore, is because they don't want to repeat the same problems that their parents had.
Yeah, values, narratives. What do I mean by narrative? If sometimes somebody might come from a family where there's been a lot of divorce, or there's in the history of the family of origin, or they might come from a family where it wasn't divorce, but there was a lot of relational distance. Let's say the father was a politician or a traveling salesman or a career military man, or and so there's a lot of distance, or a pastor. There was a lot of distance in the relationship at home, and so the narrative in their mind when they come into marriage is that these are distant relationships, or that they fail, they don't work. And another one, another variable, of course, these aren't exhaustive, but these are some of the big ones, are personalities. People will often say, well, it's not going to work because it's a personality thing. Well, everything is a personality
thing.
We're persons, and every conflict is a personality conflict. But these are some of the variables that you have to deal with, and the problems kind of lie here too. What are some of the indicators that counseling is going to work and that the marriage is going to survive or not? What does a counselor look at as indicators?
These are things you look at. Someone comes in, is thinking about getting marriage counseling, this is what you look at.
And by the way,
whether or not you can help them.
I would say, You generally don't fool your counselor. The counselor may not be mature enough to call you on it, but you can see if someone's genuine or not. And I can tell when people come in by their body posture and the way they sit, the way they cross their legs or don't cross their legs, or how they sit or how they position themselves and their tone of voice. I can tell in all those things whether they're really here to make the change or not. But some of the things that we look for, honesty. And I don't just mean honesty with the counselor. I mean honesty with one another and honesty with themselves. I'll ask people right up front, do you love one another? And I get all kinds of responses, you know.
Really?
Well, you know, if things go right, or you know, any hesitation is a no. But, you know, do you love one another, you know? Why else would we be here?
Yeah, why'd we get married?
Yeah. Humility. I talked about humility. The ability to be wrong, you know, the willingness to be wrong, and to come to counseling, you know, with some brokenness and feeling like this is at least half my fault, and I've got to get me fixed. Commitment to personal change. Respect. Do they respect one another? You know, that's one of the things. Respect for one another, respect for the counselor, respect for the process. And even when appropriate, remorse is the remorse. You know, I've talked with people who have been committed adultery, and they're always, you know, in counseling defending and thinking of, you know, well, it wasn't my fault, it was his fault or her fault, or
you drove me to it.
Yeah, you drove me to it. Teachable. Boy, they have to be teachable. I had a man come in one time. And he came in because his wife drug him in. That was obvious by his body posture, and he was just kind of looking around the room and counting the nails and things. He told me, okay, first of all, there's nothing you can tell me that I don't already know. And I knew right then, if I hadn't figured it out earlier, that this was not going to work. And so teachable. They have to be teachable. Vulnerability and openness. They've got to be vulnerable and open. Again, they have to be okay with being wrong. And they have to be willing to share. Even sharing, if I ask someone, you know, what's your opinion on it? And to be able to share, to listen, to trust the counselor. And really follow through. When you give them an assignment, you know, are they going to follow through and really take it to heart? I like to see people show up with a notebook.
Really? Taking notes?
Yeah.
That's an indication that they're taking it seriously.
Yeah, yeah. I had a man who was slouching and smirking, we weren't getting far at all. And then one day he got really angry. He says, I feel like I ought to have a notebook. And I said, well, a lot of people do bring a notebook. There's a lot to learn.
There you go.
So those are variables. And those are the things that the counselor the counselor would look for, among other things, but those are some of the important ones.
The counselor like you would be looking for that. And if you think you're listening to this today and you need some help, you need some marital help, Life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor would love to help you. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, you can call me at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Also, people email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. I have an office in Kirkland, an office in Edmonds. And by the way, this podcast is going to be at the Bible-Based Counselor website with the other podcasts.
BibleBasedCounselor.com. Look for it there. More with the Sound Mind broadcast in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor with an encouraging word for struggling marriages. You know, it's never too late to do the right thing if a husband and wife will fully commit to one another and apply a few biblically-based fundamentals of intimate relationship. As a marriage counselor, I teach these fundamentals and their use. To learn more about how these might help your marriage, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along on the journey today with Daniel Pryor, this week talking about should I stay or should I go? Some ideas about marriage and when it's maybe appropriate to end the marriage. Hopefully, when it may be appropriate to save the marriage. Mm-hmm. You would say it's always appropriate to try.
I hope so. I'd like to say that that it will always work, but you're dealing with people, and we've listed a bunch of variables, mm-hmm. and a lot of times people have suffered too much, and a lot of times they haven't suffered enough, mm-hmm. and they're stubborn, you know.
Well, we wanted to start right off here in the second half of the show talking about the idea of not the divorce, but the separation.
Yeah, that was I would like people, if you're just tuning in, go to the podcast and hear the first part of this show, because we wound up this first part talking about in things that the counselor looks for as indicators of whether we've got something to work with or not, whether this couple is going to succeed or not. And along with those, we were talking before the show about you know, the benefit of separating sometimes to get through some of the problems. And I've seen it work. I've seen it fail. Mark, you've seen it work.
My wife and I, about halfway, about 7 or 8 year period, which mm-hmm. seems to be mm-hmm. pretty common and benchmark for a lot of people mm-hmm. where finally things are starting yeah. to fail. We separated for, I think, 7-8 months mm-hmm. where I lived with a friend and she mm-hmm. lived at the home. But we saw each other mm-hmm. quite a bit during the week. We went to counseling. Mm-hmm. We went to choir, did mm-hmm. some different things, and it worked for us. Mm-hmm. But you're saying yeah. quite often the separation does not work.
Quite often it does not work, and I would refer back to what does the counselor look for as an indicator of whether it will or not. We talked about a lot of things, honesty, humility, commitment to personal change. If those things are there, then I think, and a plan, because a lot mm-hmm. of times when I've seen it fail, maybe a church will suggest, you know, separate because they, you know, there's
don't
a lot
get
of
divorced,
fighting.
Don't get divorced. Yeah. Just separate.
Just right. separate. Mm-hmm. But without a plan to right. actually take them.
Gotta have a plan.
Yeah. And so there has to be, on the part of the people that are involved in it, there has to be a commitment to get back together.
Mm-hmm. And we did.
And the plan mm-hmm. has to identify the problem and move toward healing that quickly. And by healing it, I don't mean just taping over it. I've seen situations where a church would allow a couple to separate, like for a weekend or a week, where maybe there's physical abuse, and then say, okay, get back together and hug and make up.
And that would always be an indicator of time to separate if there's abuse going.
Yeah, so we were going to move on to some obstacles, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. First of all, typical obstacles that barriers to healing in the relationship, inequality. There has to be equality if there's going to be healing, and this could take many forms, but the one that we see a lot is women, not always, but in general, will approach marriage as the more vulnerable person. Why? Well, she gets pregnant, and he's free to leave, but she's got now a child, and that's, you know, in particularly in some states, and certainly the state of Washington, if the mother is not on drugs and totally loopy, and there's a separation, she gets the children pretty much all the time. And so so there's that practical thing. And then the mother's wired for nurturing. The woman is wired for nurturing and wired for, they're just naturally more selfless. Mm. And so a lot of times in counseling, The husband, without realizing it, will assume that, just a typical for male, will assume this entitlement without even realizing that he's doing it. He thinks he's a really sensitive guy coming to counseling, but there's so many levels of entitlement. And I've personally experienced that in my marriage, just going down through those levels of, are you kidding me? How, I mean, that was terrible, you know, the way I was treating her, but, you know, I didn't realize it at all. I thought, you know, it was okay, since she wasn't complaining. There has to be equality. Some people, you know, couples come in and somebody's over-controlling or over-functioning or over-communicating, and the other one is under-controlling, under-functioning, under-communicating. So there has to be, you have to level, you know, every hill brought low, every valley raised. There has to be that. Otherwise, you'll probably not go far. Physical abuse, of course, physical abuse, if that's an, physical abuse has to be stopped somehow. So intervention somehow, and calling the police. You know, I've told wives, you can't negotiate from a position of weakness. If you're going to try to, if you want to bargain with this man and say, you know, I want more affection, I want more love, you know, and sometimes you have to be, you know, love must be tough. Sometimes you have to be that way to get the guy's attention. It's usually that way. Sometimes it's the other way around. I think it's more difficult for the guy to demand the woman's attention than for the woman to. That's just my experience. But so sometimes I'll say, you know, you have to put some teeth in this deal if you want his, you know, if you want to gain his commitment, you've got to hook him somehow. And if there's abuse, and he should know that, you know, Charlie or Fred or whatever, if you touch me like that, I'm going to call the police and you're going to go to the pokey.
Well, that's definite separation.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah. That needs to be done. That needs to be, the man needs to understand that there's no excuse for that behavior. And so we talked about separation. Mm-hmm. When is it good? When is it not? And sometimes physical abuse, there has to be that, you know, and I've told wives that you need to have a place to go and you need to go there. And the husband, you know, doesn't need to know where that place is. And if it makes him angry and mad, then
some people would say too, if a man is hitting a woman, that'll never change, and she needs to end it right there and get herself safe and get her kids safe. And would you say that that's usually
no,
the case?
No, I think that sometimes.
Can that be changed?
I think that there's a good amount of time that men don't understand where that sense of entitlement is coming from. Mm-hmm. They're just acting on a value that's been modeled for them. You know, maybe their dad didn't hit their mom, but the value of, you know, the superiority of the male and the entitlement must have certainly been there. And so they're just living out on that. They can be brought to understand that, to empathize. It's a road. It's a journey.
It's a road, but maybe you need to be separated during that.
Yeah.
And
addiction, certainly. Well, you know, addictions need to go, first of all, addiction is the opposite of relationship. So it's very hard to work on a relationship when you've got an addiction going, because you're going in two different directions at the same time.
Whether it's chemical or a behavioral addiction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Narrative of hopelessness.
And this is an obstacle. This comes from a family of origin. It can also come from repeated failures within the relationship. So the narrative says relationships don't work out. So if there's a long history of divorce in your grandparents, in your parents, if your parents were divorced when you were young or divorced, you know, there's a narrative that goes along with that. And that narrative says, you know, they just don't work out. And so you're more likely to want to, you know, push the button. And when troubles arise, which sometimes counseling could help, the narrative tells you, nah, probably
not.
And
this is more and more of a problem in our society. This is probably one of the number one reasons people don't stay married or don't even get married is because of this.
Yeah. Okay. Now I've got down here distance, and you know, I do a lot of talking about relational distance and how that's what relationships are, they're distance. But natural behaviors and personalities, that is when I'm saying that, that's what comes natural to me and the natural man, not the spiritual man, but you know, the man who is self-centered, the woman who is self-centered, self-seeking. Natural behaviors and personalities are fundamentally defense mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And so this is an obstacle, because we're dealing with two people who have their defense mechanisms in, you know, full active, full-on defense mechanisms. And They're not used to trusting, and so a lot of the counseling is to try to get the defense mechanisms down, and that's difficult because each one is looking at the other and saying, "Well, I'm not going to put down my knife until he puts down his, or right. I'm not putting down my shield until
right.
you know." So somebody has to volunteer to be vulnerable. Intimacy issues, skewed perception of love, and then I've talked before a lot about. The obstacles of lack of trust, lack of forgiveness, lack of communication or communion. And I would invite people to go to the website, the podcast, and look on the podcast back in the history for the love triad, trust, forgiveness, and communion, or go to the ChristianCounselorsForum.com website and look at the article.
The love triad.
The love triad.
Kind of your thoughts on some great building blocks for a good marriage.
Closing thoughts.
Some closing thoughts here real quick.
So most formidable barrier to the rebuilding of the marriage is the amount of ground level change that's necessary. And so this is why courage and humility are fundamental to this. People want to transplant their old ways in the new bucket or the old wine in the new skin. Mm-hmm. You can't heal the marriage if you don't change because the marriage is sick. It's not the marriage that's sick, it's the people.
Right.
The marriage is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's exposing these weaknesses and fallacies. So you can't put your old wine in the new skin. You can't just move back into the house or sell the house and move into another one and things will be okay. You can't get out of one marriage and go to another one and leave your troubles behind.
Right.
You're taking them with you. It requires a paradigm shift. Here it is. From self to other. You have to move from self-centeredness to other-centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
You have to move from safety to vulnerability, nakedness. You have to move, and I'm talking to the guys too. First of all, from preservation to sacrifice, it really takes the grace of God and an overhaul of one's way of thinking. And then, you know, with sufficient time and commitment, I say all things are possible. And those are my closing thoughts.
Well, okay, people are hearing this and they've been thinking about separation or possibly divorce, but they want to give it another shot. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Call me at 425-778-6169. That's 778-6169. People also email me through the website BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you'll also find this program and the podcasts, offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, another great edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with Life Coach and Counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.